The long and winding road leads us here to the doorstep of the postseason. One win, a little bit of help away from ending 17 seasons of misery.
Allen steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
Oops, he throws. Touchdown! Andre Reed for the touchdown! The Bills have scored!
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. You're listening to episode number 35 of the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Matt here and Alex as well. Alex, how you doing?
So we're 6-3, and I feel like the consensus is absolutely miserable and frustrated. I don't know about you.
Well, me personally, as I said in the last episode, if you gave me this at the beginning, I would cut your hand off. I'll cut your hand off for it. Only, yes, we're going to have there has been a fair load of issues on the offensive side, but it's something that, well, we've seen McDermott get a bit flustered about it in his recent press conference. But even though we are struggling and faltering a little bit on the offense, there might be a glimmer of hope. Maybe not much, but as long as we go off the defense, we're still in. We're still going to be in games. Obviously, the last streak is going to be a bit tough. Potentially three, I wouldn't say guarantee, but about 90% guaranteed wins, with the others being a shootout.
So why do you think that McDermott at his press conference was frustrated? Was the questions just bothering him? Or, like, the way I read it, he either thinks this offense is fine and is bothered by the question, or he's disparaged by Allen's lack of progress. Maybe he's losing faith in Daboll. Maybe he just is frustrated himself because he just doesn't know how to coach offense or figure offense out or how to, you know, get the right people in place. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
To be honest, I don't think it's too much of him and Allen and his progression. I mean, he got told and been told, obviously, to try and protect the ball more towards the beginning of the season after he's had those, after the Patriots game, where we had three interceptions. But then Allen's come out and said recently that McDermott's told him to be fearless and just go out there and play the game, not the opposition. So I don't think too much it's Allen's progression, but more potentially he's getting sick and tired of everyone always asking what's up with the offense, why is the offense not motoring? You spent all that money in the offseason fixing the offense, and yet here we are struggling to get any sort of movement. And yeah, I believe potentially the play calling is going to be a massive issue.
Yeah, so I mean, so focusing on the offense, I wanted to kind of break that down. But then, we've done that before. We seem to do it every week. So I thought that this is just kind of deeper than what the players are doing on the field. I think this is a scheme thing. This is a philosophy thing. This is the design of what the front office wants. So I want to focus more on McDermott, Daboll, Bean, and Pegula. So I went through and I figured out all of the offensive statistics under McDermott since he's gotten here. So luckily it's not much. So 2017 under Rick Dennison, you're looking at Tyrod Taylor. What did that offense look like? And it obviously looks pretty much like it does now. Rick Dennison, previous offensive coordinator for Denver and for Houston. So back then you're looking at the good Peyton Manning offenses in Denver and also the bad Peyton Manning offense in Denver. But that was just because he, got super old. And at Houston, when they had Fitzpatrick, he's now the O-line coach for the Vikings. So you're looking at 29th ranked in yards, 22nd in points, but 31st in passing yards and 27th in passing touchdowns. One stat that really stood out to me was that from week 10 on, We only scored 4 offensive touchdowns in the second half, which was second worst in the NFL. So, again, under Tyrod, you might want to look at game manager. You can also look at the coaching wanted to protect the football, so they played it conservative. And I think that's kind of where McDermott's frustration could have been coming from with this press conference. At the beginning of the season, we're like, Josh has to stop turning the ball over. So he does, and now it's, oh, you're not scoring enough. So, yeah. But I think that's the philosophy, I think, of this offense is ball control.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it probably is going to be the case there. That's how they're trying to do it. I mean, obviously the passing stats for Denison, obviously you're going to have to take effect there. Tyrod, yes, he did protect the ball well, but he would also use his legs a little bit more than what we were expecting. So, yeah, the passing stats will be down. But even so, when he's had the attempts to pass, yeah, it's a bit shitty, so to speak. And
yeah, it was 5.4 net yards per pass attempt, and you want that number to be closer to 6. So that's not a good number.
The one thing that annoyed me is I've been seeing people compare Tyrod's last 20 games with Josh Allen's first 20 games.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, you got to take the situation into account. I mean, Josh is young and new, and Taylor had a chance to learn the NFL, you know, game plans and stuff like that. He was able to figure it out, yeah.
And they had different coordinators, offensive coordinators as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's so hard to be able to compare those kinds of things.
I mean, I've even seen one about they're comparing Jim Kelly's, in inverted commas, second year in the NFL, which would technically be his fourth season because of the USFL, comparing Jim Kelly's second NFL season with Josh Allen's second year. But again, you can't compare like that because it's a different era.
Crazy, yeah.
Because this year, in the 2019, everyone's looking for more passings. That's why we're seeing 4,000, even 5,000 yard passes. Whereas back in Jim's days, you're going to focus mainly on balance, maybe more run heavy than it is pass.
Yeah, it's a completely different kind of style of football. I mean, I went to go try and do that. Later on, I'm going to talk about like philosophy and the mindset of what the front office wants the Bills to be. But yeah, it's so hard to be able to, because the game is completely different compared to back then. But then you want to look at McDermott's offense under Brian Daboll. And instead of looking at the Bills rankings, which I think we all know are bad, last year was bad because Josh Allen was so green, and this year he still is, and they're kind of playing it safe now. But looking at what Daboll has done before he was with Buffalo, he's never had a good passing offense. He's always had a decent running offense, but looking at in 2009, he ranked 32nd in yards, 2010, 29th, 2011, 23rd, 2012, 32nd, 2018, 31st, 2019, 24th. And that's for passing yards total. He's never ranked higher than, you know, 22nd. His best season came in 2011 with Miami. Their quarterbacks were Matt Moore, Chad Henne, and J.P. Lossman. So,
that's a name for the past.
Yeah. I think he only had like 10 snaps. Surprisingly, you would think 2011, I should remember J.P. Lossman being in Miami, but I don't remember that at all. So it makes me think, and why did they bring him in? When you know you're going to go out and draft a quarterback, why bring in a guy who's never had success in the passing game? And that decision falls on Pegula, McDermott, and Brandon Bean. And this leads me to my second point, which is you hear it all the time. Buffalo's a blue-collar city. They like smash-mouth football, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know what I like? Scoring points and winning. I don't need it to be physical and gritty. This is this dumb idea that you need to be tough to win in Buffalo. And you saw it under Ralph for most of the time, and now Pegula, that this theory still holds true. Our decision makers are behind the curve when it comes to how a football team should be handled and structured. I still think that we're stuck on this stupid idea that you need to focus on running and defense because of Buffalo weather and Buffalo winter. So I went and looked at the schedule for the last 5 years. This year, we're going to have, and I'm ranking this based on like mid-November forward, cold and snowy cities. There's going to be 5 games this year, 5 last year, 6-17, 4 in 2016, and 6 in 2015. This isn't even snow games. This is just cold in November onward, cold and rainy or cold and snowy, those kinds of cities. So do you really want to build your philosophy on offense around 5 games per year? No, you don't. It's just ridiculous that we have a system that is predicated on playing good defense and running the ball. At least that's the theory, because you can see, based off run-pass splits ratios, we're throwing the ball more this year than we have in the last 3 years with McDermott, which is good, but we're still have a net average yards per attempt to be in the low 20s, which is bad. So, and then it just got me thinking about who could they have hired better than Daboll? So I looked at all of the offensive coordinators that have been hired since 2018 that haven't already stayed with their team.
Yeah.
And what my research came to show me was is in summation, because I'm not, I was going to break it down by team and by player and by coach, but what it goes to show me is that any team that has hired an offensive coordinator within the last 2 or 3 years from outside their own organization does not have a good passing offense. The best passing offenses are offensive coordinators who have been with their team or in their, you know, coaching philosophies, I mean, coaching structure for the last 5+ years. That's McDaniels since 2012. That's Pittsburgh. Their OC has been with them since 2010. Houston's been with them since 17. The Chiefs' offensive coordinator has been with them since 2013.
With those, is it they're actually being the offensive coordinator for that long, or have they been, say, the quarterback's coach or wide receiver's coach?
No, yeah. So, like, the Pittsburgh guy, he's been their QB coach since 2010 and just became their OC this year.
Okay.
So it's what you want for a passing offense is a coach and a QB who have kind of come up together and created the play together. Because look at what happened in Green Bay. The Packers, our old friend Nate Hackett, he's killed Aaron Rodgers. His stats are in the mid to low 20s. They do not have a passing offense anymore. But they're winning via running the ball, so good for them. But Aaron Rodgers not doing it by himself anymore, not needing to. But the fact is that they have a more run-styled offense, but when they need to throw it, they still have Aaron Rodgers. So it's fine. They're just throwing less with him.
Yeah.
And then, like, the last team I looked at, because this is kind of the blueprint, I would say, is the Ravens. And again, it's a newer kind of situation. Greg Roman, their offensive coordinator, whom we know, has been with the Ravens since we let him go. He was in 2015 and 16. His passing offense with us was 12th and 25th, but that's two different quarterbacks. Right now, he's 7th in net yards per attempt in the NFL. And I think the most important thing is having an offensive coordinator who's good at offense, who's good at throwing the ball philosophy-wise, and a head coach who trusts him, and they build a playbook together. It doesn't happen immediately. But I think that in our situation, the problem is that we have a guy who's never been good at throwing the football.
Yeah.
And it's not. And the most important thing I want anyone to take away from this is, I'm almost finished, is that it's not about the playbook. It's about the philosophy of offense. It's about how you choose your play calls at the right time. Brian Daboll uses something. It's an Earhart Perkins offensive playbook. which is derived from what the Patriots use. And most people think about an offensive playbook is about the plays that are in it. It's not. It's about the terminology inside the playbook.
Yeah.
So our playbook is broken down so that the Josh has to make a play call. It's going to be condensed and quick. There's not a lot of terminology in it.
Yeah.
I think that the plays that we're running are fine. Because when I watch the All-22, there are plays where their guys are getting open and Josh is just missing them. But what the offensive coordinator can do is to make the right play calls at the right time where Josh doesn't need to focus on going through his second and third read. I think Brian Daboll's problem is play calling, situational play calling. And we saw it last week against the 30th ranked rush defense. And we're chucking the ball all over the field. It's just wrong decision making. And that's where we're at right now. And based off my research, it goes to show that if we stick with McDermott, Daboll, and Allen, things should get better. But it comes down to, will Pegula and Bean have the patience for that? Will the fans have patience for that? The offense has gotten better over the last 3 years. I mean, in terms of yards per play, net yards per pass attempt, average points per drive, net yards per drive, and percentage of drives ending in an offensive score, they've gotten better 17, 18, and 19. The problem is that it started off at the bottom, and we're still in the bottom third. So
then what would you say? If Pegula Bean decided to part ways with Brian Daboll, would you look at, say, Ken Dorsey? Would you look at Chad Hall if we're going from inside the organization, Chad Hall being the wide receiver coach, or you're going to try and tread the tires on someone else from a different system altogether? So I think Daboll, he'd mainly hire for what he did in that season with Alabama, but it's Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at a coach who's come from college and is doing poorly, then you can look at one of the guys that I looked at that's a new hire is Mark Helfrich from Chicago. He was the head coach of Oregon for the last 4 years, minus 2017, which he took the year off. He was great in Oregon as a passing offense, but the Bears have been bad. And their head coach came from college, was going to be the next Sean McVay. Their passing offense, decent last year, bad this year. I think it takes time. But, I would, with Daboll, give him till the end of the year to figure it out. And then before I fire him, I try and figure out the philosophy of who we have in staff. Because you look at Ken Dorsey as quite possibly being a Kellen Moore in Dallas, where he's an ex QB. He was the QB coach and now he's the offensive coordinator. He knows what's best for Josh Allen, I think. And of course he's in the meetings with Daboll. They talk all the time about what's best for Josh, but he's not calling the plays. So if Ken Dorsey can be better at calling plays, then that's something that McDermott needs to figure out. But I think the most frustrating thing, the answer to all of this, is patience.
Yeah.
Because Josh is more green than any of the QBs that I was talking about in Pittsburgh when Roethlisberger came in. He had a slower start, but he was still really good right away. Same with the Texans. What's their quarterback? It's not to my tongue.
I can't remember.
This is where you need it. Watson. He was good off the bat. Chiefs, Mahomes, good out of the gate. Cowboys, Prescott, average this year, really good. Eagles, their offensive coordinator since 2007, their guy since 2017, was with Wentz, good kind of out of the gate. So our situation dictates nothing but patience. And I think if anything, the schedule that we have has bought Daboll some time because the record, you can't fire someone with this record.
Yeah. So
I think, I think knowing Pegula and Bean, I think that patience is what they've been all about with this current staff.
Yeah.
So strap in, get comfortable, because I think this is what it's going to be through next year. And then year, if we're not in the 15s in terms of passing offense, then I think you're firing someone. But it's going to be Dable till all year. So get used to it.
The one thing, obviously, I think I did mention the stats on where he's in being shotgun, when he's being under center and all that. And he seems, Josh Allen seems to excel. And this is where the play calling and the terminology should be better for, is when he's in the, when he's under center or doing play action. There's another bit of fact I've saw that most of Josh Allen's pass attempts, 78.5% of all Allen's pass attempts have been from the shotgun, where his completion percentage of 58.3%. And when there's no play action, he's been doing those plays, running those plays, nearly 80% of the time. And that he has a percentage completion of 53%. So can you say that is because of how DeBall's actually grown up under the New England banner for his last few years, and obviously what he's done at Alabama, or do you think that is just...
No, that's what he did in Alabama. I mean, they were great at running the ball out of the shotgun in Alabama, and the best thing about shotgun is it protects the quarterback and gives him time to throw. The frustration this year is that our offensive line is low teens in offensive and in passing pass protection. Our offensive line is good at run protection. So it's just more baffling to me about what happened last week is that all of the philosophy, all of the stats, all of everything showed that we should have run the ball more and we didn't. And that's the hard thing to deal with, because the decision was made to throw the ball against Cleveland, and that was the dumbest decision to do. So we'll see what McDermott means by allowing Josh to, go out there and play fearless. Because what it should mean is it should mean run, then play action. Is what all of the stats show we should be doing. And throwing from under center, quick hitches and stuff like that. And the deep passes should come via play action, not from shotgun. Josh isn't there yet. Josh isn't the quarterback to get shotgun and have 3 seconds and hit 15-yard darts. We're not there yet. And that's what people want to see. And I think that it's just because we're so frustrated with not having a quarterback that right now we feel like we could have one, and we're rushing along his timetable. And people need to be patient.
So, I mean, I think that'll bring us on to what to look out for in our preview of the Dolphins game. I think that's the next step on the route to the playoffs.
Yes,
I think it's pretty much for me the same as it was last time. But see if we can. If we can get a few more read options in, maybe even have what Cleveland did and did well a couple of times, have those two running backs in the backfield. Bit of confusion.
I mean, that's been something that I've been calling for kind of all season, and maybe it's just not in the playbook, but I love the idea of having Gore and Singletary in the backfield at the same time. It keeps the defense honest where they're expecting run, but if we have two wide receivers out there, you can hit play action, or you can hit Singletary in the flat from play actioning it to Gore. So there's just so many options. I love the McKenzie route last week that Josh just missed him. It was a deep crossing pattern that got him open, and that's a perfect thing to do via play action, where you can do a lot of those kinds of things, because play action will, again, buy you time. So I think what we're seeing is an offense that's still trying to figure it out. I think last year, you can't attribute anything that happened last year to what is happening this year, because last year it was just trying to get Josh to get comfortable. And now it's trying to find the identity of, at the beginning of the season, we let him sling it and he was throwing interceptions. And then we said, hey, let's stop doing that. But now we're not getting the yards. So now a smart coach will find that happy medium. So the rest of the season is, we're going to really see what the philosophy is. Because you've noticed wide receivers have been coming in and out. And you can tell what the offensive scheme is based off of, is Duke playing or is Isaiah playing, kind of, you know? But now we got the speedsters with Brown and Foster and McKenzie underneath and Brown and Beasley underneath. And with Knox and Croft, and there's the opportunity for so much.
Yeah, they've got a lot of options. They just
need to figure it out.
Yeah, they've got a lot of options to go for. I mean, again, I think you put it down to the play calling, and they obviously want to call the plays and call the offense as per the game itself. But it should be a case where they need to, as you say, get the identity, get those plays which they believe or which can cause a lot of confusion for the defense, and actually get that out there.
Yeah, just the frustrating thing is that I don't think that they yet know exactly how they want to do this. So, this, again, I said this the last 3-4 weeks, this is a good opportunity for us to get comfortable in a offensive identity.
Yeah.
My biggest thing is I want teams to game plan for us more than we game plan for other teams. I want us to have an offense where teams are like, shit, we need to figure this out. Instead of us looking at a defense and saying, oh, we need to adjust this for that. I want to have an offense. I want that meeting in practice to be like, all right, here's how our offense can pick apart this defense. Not here's how we need to change our offense to pick apart this defense.
Yeah.
So with the Dolphins being bad at pass defense, bad at rush defense, we should be able to dictate this whole game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dolphins defense is being a little bit more aggressive, which is good for play action. So this is a game where, with all the talk, McDermott's frustrated. Allen says we're going to play fearless. I want to see 34-10, 34-14, all offense. I don't want to see a special teams return with a minute left to give us 30 points. You know, I want to see 4 touchdowns on offense.
Yeah, I mean, it is obviously who they're going to play. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things offensively that they need to do. I mean, just looking at the stats from the last time we played Dolphins, combined they had 23 rush attempts for 117 yards, 5.1 yards per carry on there. Then obviously they had 16 receptions, Josh going 16 for 26, 16 receptions for 202 yards, average 12.6 yards per reception with 2 touchdowns. And I think what we're seeing now more in this offense, what we did, against the Browns, was Cole Beasley. He's starting to get a bit more involved in this, which is good. Especially when you've got Brown on the outside, Foster, if they decide to actually put him on the outside and use him on the outside, and Beasley, Knox, and obviously McKenzie in the middle. So we've got those positions, and hopefully we can actually get Singletary involved a lot more. Because at 6.5 yards on average per carry
he's got, which is only second.
He's only just behind Lamar Jackson. He's top running back for yards per carry. If you exclude obviously Lamar Jackson being a quarterback.
Yeah.
So I think the main key is to get those personnel and actually get the right call plays at the right time and
absolutely
use weapons.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the glaring problems that I had with the game film from last week was Josh goes through, and this is all about the offensive line and pass protection. Josh goes through his reads very, very quickly. And it's where once his one isn't there, his feet, you can see it. He starts to panic, and he goes through his reads too quickly, where on a few plays, his second and third reads got open, but he already came off of them too quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that once you establish the run, you're going to buy yourself more time to be able to figure that out. Once you work on play action, you're going to be able to figure that stuff out.
Yeah.
We need to make it easier for him still. And I think that it's frustrating to say that because you want him to just get it. But I don't think Josh is that kind of guy yet. So again, the whole my whole thing, the theme of this show is patience. And luckily we're 6-3, so we can afford it this season. Because next season is going to be different. But another off season could make things easier for him.
Exactly.
Because he needs to work on his footwork, needs to work on how to go through his progressions. He needs to work on staying in the pocket. So a run game will help with that. So this is a great opportunity for Josh to be able to work on all those things against a very bad defense.
Yeah.
So that's that's all I need. Show it to me.
Yeah, I think they've also been working a little bit more on the deep ball in practice. And I think Josh has even come out himself and said that it must be something psychological when McDermott, as she said, to calm it down, turning into a game manager. The fact that something has actually almost like turned the wick down, so to speak.
I honestly don't care at all about his deep pass percentage.
Yeah.
It's such a small sliver of this offense. And yeah, it'll help with chunk plays and with quick scoring drives, but that shows me nothing in terms of his progression into becoming a good NFL quarterback. Because Tyrod was great at the deep ball. So what do you take away from that, you know?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, to be honest. I think with Tyrod, he obviously knows how to protect the ball. Obviously, I think he's just...
He was really good at putting, you know, touch on his deep passes. But, I mean, his would even float out of bounds. But, I mean, go back and look at some of his best plays. You know, they're streaks, and he's able to hit those. You know, if he hits one this week, great. If he doesn't, I'm not going to be upset about it. Because
it's
about efficiency. And
can he
throw for 65%? Can he make the right reads? And is Dable putting him in the right position to do so? Is he calling the right plays at the right time? So that's my main focus. And that needs to happen this week. Because if we have a bad offensive game against Miami, if we have the same game against Miami as we did last time, then you're going to look at a lot of panic happening. And I'm going to stay patient because I think it's guaranteed that we win this game. I don't care. There's no such thing as a trap game. We know that we need to win this game. We're going to be as hungry as Cleveland was last week. So we're going to win. And in this one, I need it to look angry.
Yeah.
I want to put our hand around their throat and not relent all game. And that's going to come down to Dable's play calling abilities, calling the right plays at the right time and setting things up.
I think the next key has to be that run defense and actually getting pressure onto the quarterback. I mean, obviously we've been gashed twice on there. I mean, they haven't got Mark Walton. He's on his second of his 4-game suspensions, and the next best rusher after him, according to the stats of the last game against Dolphins, was Kenyon Drake, who's now at the Cardinals, 6 for 21 yards. Then Fitzpatrick, and then Kalen Ballage. But it's something that they've obviously, they still need to sort out and actually and get stronger at. But well,
the last time we played Miami, I mean, they had, I mean, Mark Walton went 14 for 66. Kenyon Drake went 6 for 21, and Ballage went 3 for 7. So we were able to stop them. The bleeding really happened in Philly.
Mm.
So, you know, we'll see. I don't care. It's fine. If our pass defense is top 5 in the NFL and our run defense is in the 20s, I mean, you can't expect – the problem is that we expect great defense because we need great defense to win. But if our defense is just average, then our offense should be able to – then what we want out of our offense should be good enough to win this game.
Yeah. I mean,
we give up 140 yards on the ground. That should be fine because our offense should be able to put up 30 against this team.
Yeah, I think an interesting stat is that out of the front, so out of Murphy, Hughes, Phillips, I'm not going to include Starr in this. Ed Oliver, and I think that's pretty much it. Maybe Shaq Lawson. Who do you think has got the most sacks and who's second?
Well, it's Jordan Phillips, number one. And second would be Shaq?
Nope.
Jerry Hughes.
Yep, with 2.5 sacks.
That's not enough from your defensive end.
And you've got 6.5 from Jordan Phillips as a defensive tackle.
Yeah, so, no, we need more out of the defensive ends and from the linebackers, I would say. But I'm not worried. We don't need sacks because our pass defense is so good.
Yeah, I think that's helping obviously a lot. But obviously, the more and more that our secondary are actually holding on the pass defense, that should be giving the defensive ends more time to get that rush to get to the quarterback. I mean, another fact is that there's only one team in the NFL that's yet to allow a 100-yard receiver, which is the Bills.
Yep, it's great. So, yeah, I don't need to ask any more from the defense, honestly. Yeah. As long as the run defense is average, the pass defense stays great, that's good. The only focus going forward the rest of the season is going to be on the offense and can they figure it out, because we got some real big tests after Miami here, and they're going to need to show me that they can do it against Miami where they can survive against the other teams.
Yeah, I think to be honest, obviously, the Dolphins, I'll probably say Broncos and Jets, you're looking at 3 wins on there. Then you've got Pittsburgh, whose defense has now started to come to the top, but their offense is stuttering quite a bit.
Yeah, so they're going to be a good defense.
That's going to be a real test, excluding the Patriots, of the offense on there. And I'm just looking at
Denver's a good defense. Dallas is a good offense. Baltimore's a good offense. Pittsburgh is a good defense. The Patriots are good overall, and the Jets suck. So after this, we're going to face a team that has a top 10 offense or defense 5 straight. So,
and I'm looking at the moment at the schedule for the next year, obviously outside the AFC East. We're going to have the Broncos again. We're going to have the Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks, 49ers, Texans, and Steelers. At the moment, a strength of schedule of 0.524 and a win-loss of 70 wins, 70 losses, and 1 tie in this present season. So
yeah, it's very apparent that this offense is going to need to be better to be able to play next year
and just
stay competitive. So
that's where this the Broncos, the Steelers, and the Patriots game will actually show where we are and what we're going to need to improve on in the off season. Because I mean, look at that. If the season was to finish now with that record and all that, I could only see maybe 1-2, potentially not even 4 or 5 wins. The
good news is that the league changes a lot year to year, so who knows? But, I mean, honestly, I mean, to our listeners, You know, reach out on Twitter. I mean, what do you think about this offense? What do you think about Dable? What do you think about the philosophy? What do you think happens in the next few weeks? I mean, I know that a lot of people in our Facebook chat are fighting over Josh Allen. It's like, you know, 60-40 like him, but the 40 is really loud. So I try and keep the peace, Matt, and I try to keep the peace on there. it's just really tough because, like I said, we haven't had a quarterback in forever, and we want one, and we can sniff it, but it's just not, you know, a full thing yet. So reach out to us. Let us know what you think. I mean, does Dable get another year? You know, can he salvage it for the rest of the season? Throw us comments and at us on Twitter.
So last question for you before we go. You want a 34-10 win?
Yeah, it needs to be in the 30s. I mean, make it 38-14.
Okay.
17. Yeah, I don't care what the Dolphins score. I want 30 plus points.
Okay, so you want to see all I want to do is see a solid play calling event, play calling game with the right balance and using, again, the right playmakers into position. I think, to be honest, yes, I would love to get 30 points as well. To be honest, I don't care. If we put up 30, great. If we put up, say, 27, I'm still happy with that. As long as that offense is more balanced and we're starting to see what could happen over the next 5-6 weeks that we know that
27 is four touchdowns and one missed extra point, which I think is doable because we didn't even talk about Hauschka, but God, who wants to?
Yeah. Well, you know, we always love our special teams, but we'll leave that for another episode. Game.
Absolutely, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I want a complete game. There's no reason why we shouldn't have it against a bad defense.
Yeah.
So let's go, Jimmy. What's your score?
My score, I think it's going to be tight. It's going to be 28-17. I still see this. Miami are dangerous, even though they've won the last two games. They've been poor all season. The last two games, they have started to play well, but I still think we'll win. I think they will score more than 10 points. So 28.
Dangerous is too much. I would say sneaky, not dangerous.
I'd still say 28-17.
All right. Well, with whatever happens, we will be back on this after the game. And hopefully I'll have a better tone. Hopefully I don't need to look at other teams' offensive coordinators. Hopefully I don't have to look at the philosophy of our front office. Hopefully I don't have to talk about Brian Dable's history. Hopefully we can talk about all of the good things that happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, reach out to us on Twitter, either the main Bills, UK Bills Twitter, which is Bills Backers UK, or even reach out to us on our own podcast Twitter, which is at @RWBB_podcast. As Alex says, reach out, give us your opinions, your views on the offense, the ball, what you want to see change, what you want to see introduced, and unless you've got anything else to put in, or we save it for the next show.
I'm beat.
And on that note, it is good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Keep subscribing, downloading, keep your involvement and keep interacting with us. And from me and a very beaten, tired Alex, it's Go Bills.
Go Bills.
Not us.
Yeah, not us.
You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work. No. Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.